You know, there's a way to listen on your computer or on your television to the hearing room.
Good morning. We're going to call this meeting to order. Welcome to the Parks and Trails Committee. We're very excited to be here. Obviously, I'm particularly excited to have the opportunity to chair this committee and to work with an excellent group of legislators who will be here to help us figure out a good strategy for the state of Minnesota to maintain our parks and trails and to make good use out of the funding that is available to us. We are very lucky to have this opportunity today when most organizations and most programs are really talking about eliminating programs, cutting funding. Here we are talking about opportunities to invest new dollars in this area. And so I am fully aware of that privilege, and I am thankful for this opportunity. We have today a series of presentations, but I wanted to make sure that the audience and all the members know about this, and some people in the audience know that we are going to have a very different meeting today. We are going to try to test a new model of participation. And the reason we are going to do this today is because, as you know, the Environment Committee, the chair of our Environment Committee, decided that we need to look at a process and a structure that will show the public how we will manage this new funding. The legislation is very clear. We cannot use this money to supplant existing efforts or to fund existing efforts. So it is very complicated to really look at how do we separate how do we separate the funding so the public will know how we use these new dollars, and at the same time we coordinate with the existing programs. And that's what we need to do. We need to make sure that we coordinate, but we also show taxpayers how we will make good use out of these new funding. And so in doing that, we have now committees that will have been assigned to look into this. And the intent here then is that you will have full participation in the designing of these new strategies and these ideas. Very seldom in government we have an opportunity to really start from scratch and design a vision. We have that opportunity now. And so we're going to come together to really look at how do we use this money, how do we create a vision for the state of Minnesota that maintain and sustain the good things that we have and then enhance those things that need to be enhanced in our parks and trails. We're very proud of our parks and trails in the state of Minnesota, so we need to make sure that we maintain and preserve what we do well. So right now, what we're going to do is we have three parts to this particular hearing. The first part will include presentations from different organizations, agencies, stakeholders that have done significant work in this area already. Many people came to my office and said to me that a lot of work has been done and that we don't need to reinvent the wheel, that a lot of conversations have taken place, and that the public really wants to share that with us. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to hear from those individuals who have participated and convened groups. They are going to share with us their views and their plans. After we finish that conversation, we are going to have a recess, but we are going to stay in this room and we are going to divide ourselves into four groups to have an informal but very informed conversation about priorities. So this will give you an opportunity to really share something that you might not be willing to share with us in a public format. But this is a public format which is giving you a more intimate opportunity. You're going to have about 25 minutes to do that, and you can say whatever you want in that group. It will be documented, and we would like to have really an opportunity to share freely, but we want you to speak based on your experience in working in this area. And then we are going to convene again and share the outcomes of those conversations with the committee. And the intent here is that we will use all of your input and your great ideas to design a vision for parks and trails for this particular fund. So I don't know if members have a question at this point before we start. Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I'm concerned that this money gets divided equally between the whole state. And I'm going to insist on that. Maybe not the exact dollars, because I know the needs are greater someplace, but there are some of us here that live outstate Minnesota. And they voted for the bill, big time. And so just keep that in mind. I'm willing to cooperate, do anything. But we got to be sure that we don't slant this. When I go home and, the Metro people got all their money. I can't live with that. Not that they are, but I mean, that is the feeling when you get away from here. So we'll work together. We'll figure it out.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Vickerman. And I think this is precisely why we want to create this public space and have ample opportunity to have input from every part, every region of the state of Minnesota. We have invited, in fact, I think we have a very large group representing rural Minnesota today. And my intent from the very beginning is that we will have an open conversation and ample opportunities to make sure that when we divide this money, we will really be fair and open opportunities for the entire state of Minnesota. So that's exactly the reason why we're doing this, Senator Vickerman. My hope is that we will come out of this with a formula that really addresses the significant problems in the state of Minnesota, but it will be fair to all the regions. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I kind of agree with you, Senator Vickerman, but I think I'm more concerned that the people of Minnesota voted for this constitutional amendment, and I think that the money that we get in this area should be used for projects of significance. So I'm not as concerned that it's equally divided up as I am that we make an impact with this particular money.
Thank you, Senator. Again, we are going to precisely start that conversation. We're going to hear from different constituency groups that represent the entire state of Minnesota their thoughts as to, you know, how we should do this. And again, the idea will be to preserve those things that we do well, those preserve projects that need to be preserved, invest where we need to invest, and then expand where we need to expand. So we're going to hear and then enter into that conversation. The first presentation we have in our agenda for today is from Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and the Metropolitan Council. And so we have today members of the staff who are here from DNR.
Madam Chair, members, yes, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I have with me Cortland Nelson, who is our Parks and Trails Division Director. We also have Arnie Steffenrud with us. Our goal today is to present to you, first of all, the Division of Parks and Trails proposals in the governor's budget related to the dedicated funding. We did sit down with the Met Council and other stakeholders early on and talk about the opportunity to provide some framework, at least initially, for some ideas that we think make sense for the structural outline of these dollars. And then the Met Council will be presenting information about their system. So we're going to start off on the state system, talk about the governor's recommendations, and then go to the Met Council to hear from them on the system and their proposals. Everybody should have a copy of our presentation in your packets and also two fact sheets that we'll be referring to here as soon as we get there. And members, a lot of you have seen a lot of this information already, so I'm going to kind of go through it in a rather quick fashion. But if you do have questions, please feel free to ask them as they come up. This is the presentation outline. We're going to talk about Minnesota's outdoor recreation system, state parks and trails, water recreation trails, and regional parks and trails. And as I mentioned, review the governor's recommendations for fiscal year 10 and 11 for the Parks and Trails Fund dollars, which consists of two parts. The first one titled Investing in Our State Parks and Trails Legacy, and then the second part, the Regional Parks and Trails Grants. Just briefly for people, I wanted to include within our packet just an outline of the authorizing legislation that we're working with in this area. Not often enough do we spend time actually looking what's on the books rather than looking at amending those sections of law. And I think it's good for everybody to take a step back and look at the whole body of law that operates the system and guides the system. So Department of Natural Resources overarching statutes lie in Chapter 84. The Outdoor Recreation System lie in Minnesota Chapters 86A. The Division of Parks and Recreation is 85. Specifically, state parks are defined and outlined in 85.012, state trails in Chapter 85.015, and a program we're going to talk about here in a few minutes is the recreational grants under Minnesota Statutes 85.019. I'm going to turn it over to Cortland Nelson. He's going to talk a little bit about the system that we do have, and then we'll come back and focus on the actual proposal itself, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, welcome. Cortland Nelson, Director of Parks and Trails and DNR. Members, good morning. You have seen this slide several times, I think, over the last couple of years, and it lays out our state park system. I think you're all aware that within the last few months we have merged parks and trails into one division. So in my presentation today, I'll be talking about them as one unit. But this picture presents the layout of our state park system across the state. One out of three Minnesotans annually visits a state park. So we have about 1.5 million people in our state who are state park visitors for a total visitation in the neighborhood of 8 million. We have 226,000 acres that we manage in our state park system. Okay. This is our state parks and trails system, focusing on the trails component. You and your predecessors have authorized 26 state trails around the state. 21 of them are in some form of operation. We have 1,200 miles of non-motorized trails. We have 2,000 miles of snowmobile trails. We have 1,000 miles of state forest trails, 1,000 miles of state park trails. So in the aggregate, we have 5,500 miles of state trails. We highlighted the state forests on this graph. Many people are not aware that DNR has a large recreational responsibility for campgrounds, 54 of them, 1,000 miles of trails in the state forests, and we manage those also. We have every year a challenge to advance the number of miles that we have completed on our non-motorized system. Many of you have mostly complete, but not completed trails in your areas of the state. And of course, we would like to, as soon as the opportunity comes up, to proceed with the five trails that have been designated but have not had activity on those. That's mostly due to acquisition issues, Madam Chair. We cannot proceed with the actual development of trails until we have sufficient acquisition on those trail corridors. And so we're constantly working to advance that.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Saxop.
Mr. Nelson, and I may not have caught it, when we're talking about the total trails, this doesn't include Grand Aid trails, or does it?
Madam Chair, Senator, and that does not.
Okay, and that's a significant amount of trails.
It is. Okay. Madam Chair, members, this is our water trail system, and I've recently become much more aware of it than I was before, and we wanted to share that with you today. We have 30 designated rivers, totaling 4,300 miles of river trails that we are working with local communities and resource managers to provide. We also have, as the center just alluded to, motorized recreation opportunities all over the state. We have 350 state grants that we award to local communities for a variety, mostly of motorized activities, but not exclusively. We also have 1,500 water access sites. This is specifically so that individuals can access the bodies of water that are around the state. And we have a large task with 11,000 acres, 11,000 lakes in the state. We have a goal ahead of us to provide more access points for Minnesotans and our visitors from out of state to access these bodies of water. Again, a large grant and aid program that specifically deals with a number of the subsets of the Natural Resource Fund, where tax dollars from various user groups are put into play for the beneficiary of those users.
Okay. Madam Chair, that just provided a brief background, a little bit of historical context for members and the audience on the state park system. Now we'd like to focus on the actual proposal that the Department of Natural Resources, the Met Council, along with meetings, have after participating in meetings with stakeholders from Greater Minnesota and other participants in the park system, we came up with this proposal as a starting point, I like to say, for our discussions here within the legislature. This language is in the governor's budget system, in the change items, and also I'm going to talk about some grant language specifically that is in the governor's budget bill. So the proposal before you from the executive branch focuses on the monies for 10 and 11, and you'll notice they are significantly less in the first year than what some people may think the numbers are out there to help us with cash flow issues and the uncertainty surrounding how much money is going to be available to allocate the first year. Is this something we need to get our hands around and try to figure out? So I think this proposal comes in with a fairly conservative number, one that is probably realistic to be funded as we try to figure out where these amounts get dialed into the state budget system, how much we're actually generating. So just to provide that question for you. What the proposal before you is, and there's a fact sheet that you have that says Parks and Trails Investing in Our State Parks and Trails Legacy that you have that talk about the state acquisition or state part of these dollars. It was to take the revenue that's generated in this fund and divide it 38% for the state parks, 38% for the metro regional parks and trails, and the 24% for a statewide grant program that would deal with regional parks and trails of statewide significance. There's a couple things that we need to make sure that we keep in mind as we're talking about these dollars. One is that it's always been the legislature's intent, at least from the DNR's perspective, that there has been some equity between the state system and the metropolitan system, and also that these dollars will not provide the sole source of funding for any type of system, be it state, metro, Greater Minnesota system. There still are going to be capital needs from bonding and other sources of funding, and there still will need to be general fund appropriations made for these programs because as the negotiations on this constitutional amendment came to play, Parks and Trails became one of the smaller portions of the package, and those dollars just are not anywhere near the dollars that are needed to fully develop, operate, or maintain our total system, be it at state, local, or regional level. So it's something that you need to keep in mind as we move forward. But focusing on our proposal, it was, again, 38% for the state parks and trails, 38% for metro regional parks and trails, and then 38% for this regional parks and trails grant program. We're going to focus on the DNR, or the statewide part of this, first. Then I'm going to talk about the grant program, and then the Met Council will talk about the 38% for the metropolitan Met Council. And with that, I'm going to have Cortland Nelson talk about our outcomes. If you look at the fact sheet that you do have, it does clearly identify a lot of our key measures and outcomes that are on these slides in a little bit more detail. So if you do have questions on that, we can certainly answer those as well.
Madam Chair, as you can see by the graphic, we have three general areas that we would target these dollars. We have broken those out into percentages of use for the foreseeable future. The majority of the money would go into trail and park rehabilitation and renewal. We have come before you in various methods over the last several years and tried to make cogent arguments that our needs for our existing system as well as the expansion of the system that we have are very large. Bob addressed that a moment ago. The visitor services and outreach is a very big portion of our effort. We have been challenged by Commissioner Holston and our support groups to develop connections with new users, with new residents to Minnesota, new populations, the youth market. And so we have put together a marketing campaign, an outreach set of activities, and this would engage these new users in a more meaningful way with outdoor activities and with our system in DNR, especially state parks and trails. And then finally, our never-ending resource protection measures. We have a number of targets that we are focusing on in terms of prairie restoration and forest restoration. We have been very aggressive in improving that. A previous legislative audit in about the year 2000 was critical of state parks and our lack of resource protection measures, and since then we have ramped that up considerably, and I think many of you have been on tour at various state parks and seen the work that we have done and the long way that we have to go. We also now will be adding the trails component to that so that we will be working on our resource management in our trail areas. Maybe go to the next one. In terms of our future legacy, we hope to have a successful outcome to these key measures. The first one is, the first bullet there is a misprint. I apologize for that. That's 350,000 new participants to state parks and trails, not 1,000. Excuse me. Also increase our educational programming by 25%. This is an effort to reach out to new visitors to parks. There's a focus maybe a little bit more on the youth market in this bullet, but at the same time, it is an opportunity for us to make use of our park naturalists and seasonals and interns to increase that personal connection and do a better job of relating to them. You see the measurements that we have there that we would lay out for our restoration and renewal activities with our physical structures. We would also want to make the point, Madam Chair, that a lot of the renewal and rehab in parks and trails would be in that non-bondable category. You were very generous last year in terms of our bonding dollars, and we are rapidly at play in putting those dollars to work. But there's a lot of things that happen in parks and trails in terms of purchases or improvements that are non-bondable. For instance, picnic tables and fire grates and trail kiosks and those type of things. And we have a long list of improvements for our visitors that we would like to use, and it's in this non-bondable category that becomes now available with these dollars that we have. I think, finally, we also want to rotate back to the state forests responsibilities that we have. Those have been underfunded over the last decade, primarily because they are a need that's in our system, but they tend to fall to the bottom parts of priority lists. So our state forest trails, our state forest campgrounds, the outdoor recreation activities that are associated with those, we'd like to make those a higher priority and use part of our dollars to improve that particular arena of responsibilities.
Madam Chair, as you can see, there are a large number of needs, particularly in this area, and If you go to our fact sheet there, we have a lot more detail on these issues. Just on the area of trails and rehab and repair, bridges, bridge network on biking trails, hiking trails, snowmobile trails is in need of repair. We've got some bonding dollars last session to do that, but we did have to take some dollars and do some special work this year. You may have recalled hearing on the North Shore Trail snowmobile trail, we had to close a couple bridges down and groomers weren't able to access and groom the trail because of the condition of the bridges until we got those bridges repaired. So that network of infrastructure that's there in our outdoor recreation system is one that we would be focusing on. As Cortland said, the non-bondable capital expenditures are really significant. Our displays, our educational kiosks in our park systems, they need to be upgraded. The users of today, the kids go right for the mouse and they're looking for the touch screen, and we don't have a lot of that just because it's expensive, it takes money, and we've been focusing on bricks and mortar type things. So that would be one area that could be a large area we would focus on and would provide significant outcome and educational outreach to our users and help attract new users to the system as well. Madam Chair, I'm going to turn now to the Parks and Trails Grants Program piece of this, which deals with the 24% piece, and then we'll go back to the Metropolitan Council, and they'll talk about their 38% allocation. What we're looking for here, it's similar to the local initiative grants program that is in statute right now, but this would have a dedicated source of funding that would be allocated to this program every year. The expected outcomes are to support regional parks and trails to meet the needs of present and future generations through grants to local units of government. These dollars would be used for acquisition and development of regional parks and trails through an annual competitive grant process. There will be a local match required, as there is right now. And then the local government recipients would be responsible for the ongoing operations and maintenance of the facilities. In the governor's budget, this language does exist, which would be an amendment to 85.019, establishing this Parks and Trails Grant Fund. And you can see it would have the commissioner administer a program to provide grants for parks and trails from the Parks and Trails Fund to units of government for acquisition and betterment, public land improvements to support parks, outdoor rec areas, and trails deemed to be of regional or statewide significance. This does not preclude the metropolitan area from being involved in this grant program. It's an issue that the legislature will have to work out, trying to figure out if that's correct or not. But in our conversations with the Metropolitan Council and others, they wanted to have the grants program to be a statewide program, not just greater Minnesota. I understand some people do have concerns about that. And it goes on to say that the recipient must provide a non-state match of at least one quarter of total eligible project costs, and the commissioner shall make payment to a unit of government upon receiving documentation of reimbursable expenditures, and it provides some administration dollars to run the program. The local initiative grants program has been highly successful. It is a program that the local units of government are used to. They understand how it works. It's one that the needs well outweigh the dollars that are in the program, and we've done successful acquisitions with large numbers of local units of government, and we feel that this would be, and rather than create a new system, you could put another grant program under this arena within the Department's Office of Management and Budget Services that would provide these dollars in an effective and efficient manner.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer, I've been trying to figure this out from, you know, some of the conversations we've had about this. And part of the problem I have with some of the expected outcomes that the department has defined is it seems to me that these are outcomes that you also identify for the regular funding that exists today for parks and trails. So from previous presentations you had before our environment committee, you talk about, you know, the kind of the same goals, increasing, you know, visitors and, you know, outreach and all of these activities that are defined here. So how does the department plan to separate, you know, your goals that are stated in statute currently for the current funding from this funding? They seem to be, the expected outcomes seem to be the same. So could you tell me a little bit about how do we explain to the public what are the goals that you achieve through this source of funding versus what you're supposed to do with existing funding?
Certainly, Madam Chair, that's an excellent question. We look at the opportunity for these new dollars into the system as to supplement our activities right now. Our activities, I'll be frankly honest, are lacking in a lot of these areas. Our abilities to upgrade our campsites are totally dependent on the wills of the legislature and bonding dollars. And some of those things we can't do with bonding dollars, so we have to try to figure out how do we do that. fire rings, as we talked about, picnic tables, the kiosks, computerized systems. Those are not bondable expenditures because they do not stand up to the 20-year commitment of bond capital investment dollars. So what we're talking about here, and we can certainly frame it that way in an appropriations bill, that these are for activities above and beyond or addition to what we are doing. So that's the way we're viewing this right now. And Director Nelson probably has some more specific ideas on that, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, in the outreach component, we have legitimately been criticized for the fact that we are not providing those programming activities in the park that the park visitors are using. So I would argue that this is one of those areas where we can readily show how these new dollars have been using. We expect to have hundreds of new programs that we provide in state parks and trails once these dollars begin to flow. And we can identify them as such, that these are legacy dollars at work. We also have many outreach activities that we can conduct that will take us into various communities and provide services and programs that we have not been able to provide for decades. So I think in that category of bringing in new visitors, bringing the DNR mission and the state parks and trails services to the residents and visitors of the state, I think we can add dramatically to what is currently being provided, and it does meet the target of what was expected by the voters, and I think the legislature in putting this bill together a year ago, that this will provide new and exciting opportunities that are there. Similarly to Bob's point in resource management, we do a good job with the dollars that we have, but we need to enhance and advance those renewal activities that we have in state parks and trails for our resource management, and these dollars would be targeted for that. I'm sorry. Maybe to the heart of your question is the acknowledgement of the use of those dollars, and we are expecting that we would be having different types of banners and statements and signs that would indicate that these are the legacy dollars at work for you, so that wherever these dollars end up in our state system of parks and trails, that there would be recognition of the use of these funds.
Thank you. Senator Rommel has a question. Just want to remind you that by now we should be done with this part of the agenda. That means all the presenters should have had a time, an opportunity to do their presentation. So we really need to move very fast with this presentation and move on to the next. Senator Rommel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Nelson or Mr. Myers, I'm not too sure. I think I'm going to restate the same question that Senator Torres Ray asked you in a different way. We fund our parks partly through bonding and partly through fees right now. So where do the fees go? What does that pay for? Is that not built into the maintenance of buildings and displays and things?
Madam Chair, Senator, approximately 40% of our annual operating expenses comes from our fees from all sources that go back into the Natural Resource Fund, and you appropriate back to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes into the budget that we have, that also includes the general fund dollars that you give us, as well as a couple of special accounts. That's what drives and runs the operation of state parks. These new dollars then would be added to a list of financial resources or special accounts that would achieve these things that we've been talked about. I think in a simple way, Madam Chair, Senator, I would say that we now have the opportunity for a financial three-legged stool. We have our fees that come into the natural resources account, we have the general fund, and now we have these legacy dollars. And whether it's capital or whether it's special projects or those that we have outlined for you today in terms of our desires for the use of these legacy dollars, those will make up the three legs of our financial future for the next number of years.
Senator Rommel.
I'm just wondering if there is some way in the, and I think this is what Senator Torres Ray was trying to get at, is there some way to distinguish from the ordinary routine maintenance of the parks for which general fund and fees should cover, and the extraordinary enhancement. How can we make that clear to the public that this is above and beyond what we would normally do other than putting labels on? I think Senator Saxog referred to the idea we want to do something significant with these dollars. Have you thought about it in that kind of a sense, that this is what makes these dollars unique?
Madam Chair, Senator, the specific projects and the staff and the capital development activities that would come from these dollars would be isolated and measured separately. We have a base now of activity, and so in our mind's eye, these would be additive to those driving forces for resource management, the park renewal, and the new outreach and gateway programs that we have. And we would identify those activities and the targets that are associated with those and measured outcomes from those specifically for these legacy activities in general.
Thank you. I think we have a representative from Metropolitan Council.
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Arnie Stefford. I'm a planning analyst in the Parks Program at the Metro Council, and I want to provide an overview of the park system, enabling legislation and governance, data on our visitors to the system, our long-range plan for parks, plus past investments, the traditional sources of funding for capital and operating purposes, and conclude with the governor's recommendation. And in spite of the time, I'll try to be fast about doing this.
Mr. Stafford, unless the members have an objection, we have gone through this presentation already. I think all of us are, in the committee. So if you could concentrate, we've seen this, we have heard this, all of this presentation already. So if you could concentrate on the recommendations and kind of the council's view on very specifically how these new dollars need to be used, that would be very helpful.
All right.
Because we've seen all of this.
Madam Chair and members, in regards to the council's view on this, the governor's recommending, and I'm going to be going through this quickly on getting to those slides that you haven't seen, specifically that the funds be used for operating and capital purposes. And the reason why is that we have 10 regional park agencies that own and operate this system, ranging from the city of Bloomington that has a portion of one park reserve to counties and special park districts that own and operate many parks and trails. Consequently, each one of them has unique needs, and we need to recognize that situation. In regards to the specific points that each agency would, how they would spend those funds, I don't have that answer. You would have to get that information from the park agencies themselves. We have representatives from those agencies here today. Example that I'm going to show you illustrates, this is the governor's recommendation, and it's in the context of the general fund appropriation plus natural resources fund appropriations with the two bottom blocks in the bar chart here. The blue and the orange are buff-colored brown. Those are for operations and maintenance purposes, and those are distributed under a statutory formula to each of the park agencies, and they look at how much each of the agencies spent in the past year in operations and maintenance relative to all O&M spending, the amount of visits each agency serves compared to the total visits to the system, and the amount of land that each agency manages compared to the land in the system. Now, the new money, the Parks and Trails Fund money, is in addition to that, and as the governor's recommended, it's for operations and capital, and the exact amount needs to be worked out by each agency. This shows you an example. If all of the money that the governor recommends for fiscal year 2010 was used for operations purposes, it's that blue chart or blue bar, $6.54 million. There's over $70 million that would have to be provided by the park agencies through user fees, local property taxes, and other revenues that they collect, and then the other is the general fund and the natural resources fund appropriation. So it gives you a sense, as my colleagues from the DNR pointed out, this additional money is needed as well as the traditional funds along with the local raised dollars to operate the system. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you for your expediency. Any questions for Mr. Stafford? Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Stafford, I know by law, there's been a law in the books for a long time, and I don't know how many years, that says that the state is supposed to fund the Metro Parks system to the tune of 40%. If you add in this $6.54 million, and I think that's just for O&M.
Well, this is an example as if it was used for operations
right.
and maintenance. And here's
what
actual
would we
costs.
Be at?
Well, $85 million is the total column that you see here. So roughly 4% of that would be new money, this Parks and Trails Fund money.
And Madam Chair, Mr.
Senator Anderson,
what would be the total state contribution then? What
the percent? Total state contribution, if we go back to the previous, would be $14.75 million.
Out of 80?
Out of 80, 85, if under that example.
I wonder, Madam Chair, if one of the goals we could try to get to with new funds is to try to get to that 40% level eventually. I don't think we could do that overnight, but it seems to me that we've never met that. That's never been traditionally funded, and so it's be nice to be able to gradually ramp up to that level.
Thank you, Senator Beck.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, isn't the problem that under the 40% scenario, local spending drives the state spending, so it's totally out of the state's control?
Madam Chair, Senator Beck, you're absolutely
Senator
right.
Anderson.
So there is no, I'm not sure why that decision was made when we put it into law, but you're absolutely right. As costs go up, our share goes up without us being able to control that. Mr. Stafford, any comment on that issue?
Oh, Mr. Stafford?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, as you pointed out, the legislation talks about a goal of 40%, and in the case of looking at this situation, since the legislature doesn't control the spending for all of operations and maintenance, just a portion of it, you don't have that way to cap, if you will, the local spending, unless there was some legislation that directed that. This slide illustrates the state's contribution since 1985, when the law went into effect and appropriations were made. And you see that small brown strip on the bottom. That's the state's contribution of general fund and natural resources funds compared to the total expenses for operating and maintaining the system. And that growth, as you pointed out, Senator Bach, is due to new parks and trails coming online, new visitors coming in, and population growth and the development of that. So that's been funded by other sources, primarily by local units of government that maintain and operate these parks. So it's a question that's very difficult to resolve in the sense that the legislature in the state doesn't control that total spending.
And thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, so that law was passed in 85, you said, and at that time 40% would have been, it's like roughly $20 million or something like that, and we're not even there yet.
Yes, that's
given
correct.
Given that the total costs have quadrupled since then. So we're not even at the level where, I mean, even if we establish that as the base that the state should contribute, we're nowhere near there. So I think, you know, the fact is, you know, all that green is all my taxpayers paying local property taxes through the Met Council and through the cities. So it's I agree with you, Senator Bach, that they're, you know, the state shouldn't be on the hook for an unlimited growth, but I don't think the state has ever paid its fair share either. So maybe we can find some middle ground there.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. And I think some of the issues that we hear in the communities is that, you know, when you look at that chart and if you try to map out the regional parks and trails that exist in the state of Minnesota, which is another problem we have, which we don't have really a comprehensive inventory, there are some areas in the state that are disproportionately affected by this because of the number of parks and trails, regional parks and trails that they have within their localities. So that green portion of your chart is significant for the taxpayers in those regions. And that's one thing that hopefully through, you know, the time that we allocate to this committee, we will be, I would like to map out, because that's something that, especially for those of us who are new, we really don't know to what extent this is a tremendous burden to taxpayers in regions where we have, you know, big parks that need to be maintained, and then the local community is paying for all of that because we don't have state dollars allocated to that. But we will get into that. This will, you know, we will have other opportunities to have this conversation, and we're kind of running out of time. But it's let's get to thank you, Mr. Stafford, and we're going to move on to the next presentation in the agenda. And I will like to invite Mr. Chuck Wookin, and I would like to. Please encourage you to go through your presentation as quickly as you possibly can. We gave 10 minutes in our agenda for each presentation, and we definitely are going way above that allocated time. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. This is a great idea to have everybody in one spot. We tried to do in 3 hours what we couldn't do in three months. I appreciate the goal that you have here. My name is Chuck Wilkin. I'm the Stearns County Park Director. With me today is also John Winter from Beltrami County Parks, Greg Bernou, Carlton County Land Commissioner, Laird Mork, Chisago County Park Director, and Mark Roberts, Chair of the St. Louis River Trail Committee. And Rick Anderson was going to be with us, but I think he's probably in a ditch somewhere down in southwestern Minnesota. And Mark Matthijs from Wright County would love to have been here, but he had other obligations. We represent Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trail Providers. We're not a formal organization. We're kind of an informal organization. Who are Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Providers? We're local units of government outside the metropolitan area that provide regional parks and trails that are natural resource-based outdoor recreation facilities. These facilities provide day-use access to nature in urbanizing areas. Regional parks provide a different niche than state parks, which are major investments in large natural and historic landscapes that are unique within Minnesota. Regional parks are close to home nature opportunities. According to a report done for the LCMR in 2005 by the Association of Minnesota Counties, there are 27 different cities and 38 different counties that provide regional parks or trails in Greater Minnesota. The 2005 inventory indicates at least 62 of these regional parks are at least 200 acres or larger in size. There's a desperate need for park and trail funding in Greater Minnesota. As the governor's recent budget proposal indicated, grant requests from Greater Minnesota for regional parks and trails in 2008 were $37 million, with only $850,000 available. Stearns County alone has $20 million worth of regional park and trail projects in the comprehensive plan. Wright County is poised to acquire a 1,256-acre nature park site right next to Monticello. Using the same acreage standard as the Metro Council of 25 acres of regional parks and trails per 1,000 population, the 2007 LCCMR report by George Orning indicates a need for an additional 26,000 acres of regional parks and trails in Greater Minnesota's emerging urban areas. When Greater Minnesota regional park and trail providers receive state grants, they also sign a contract which obligates the local unit of government to 100% of the maintenance and operations of the facility for the lifetime of the facility. And I think the previous presenters have showed how that's a different rule than is in the metro area. We would like the legislature to recognize the role that Greater Minnesota fills in acquiring, developing, and maintaining regional parks and trails, and set aside an exclusive allocation. of at least 24% for the park from the Park and Trail Fund for Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. Greater Minnesota would use its share for capital acquisition, for capital development, and for capital restoration of regional parks and trails in Greater Minnesota. 22 Greater Minnesota counties and 4 cities have lent their support for this request, as included in our position statement, which is one of the handouts that you received. And we'd like to add Carlton County to that list today. Also, as one of the handouts, you received a vision statement for an outdoor legacy grant program that really has many similar elements as the governor's proposal, except it does ask that it concentrate on capital acquisition, development, and restoration projects versus any operational use. And this is just looking at Greater Minnesota. This is not trying to project that type of a requirement on the metro area or state parks. And it also recommends that there be an exclusive allocation for Greater Minnesota. And I did have a typo on that under allocation from Park and Trail Fund. At least I typed in at least 25%. I meant 24%. So I apologize for that. And on the reverse side of the position statement, there's also a map of the state that shows the counties and their location for those of us that are geographically impaired. So that'll give you an idea where we're from. We'll be glad to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions from members? We're trying to get our hands around, the information that was provided. We really appreciate that you put this together for us. Mr. Wogan invited other members of the group representing the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails, but they decided to put together their presentation, and Mr. Wogan was going to deliver that presentation on your behalf. But if there are any short statements that you would like to make, you're welcome to.
Madam Chair, John Winter, members of the committee. Basically, I'm from Bemidji, Minnesota, and I think the people in Greater Minnesota, when they voted on the amendment, felt that there would be a fair proportionate to the recreation out there. We do have very strategical projects. I think we feel very comfortable with the 24%. However, we would like to see that basically a grant program for Greater Minnesota. I think that's a very important thing to look at. But the projects that we've identified are very specific and very important to those regional areas like Bemidji. The projects we've identified are very important strategical trail projects or park projects that you can identify. And as Chuck pointed out, the maintenance and the operations in the grant program require us to continue to maintain and operate them forever.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to I'm happy that the Department of Natural Resources has put parks and trails together, seeing the significance and the overlap they have in administration and operations. But one of the things I think that we don't know about rural Minnesota, that the metropolitan area is probably relatively happy about, is that we have all the motorized trails. Most of the big snowmobile trails and the big and now the ATV trail system is in metropolitan Minnesota, and I mean in rural Minnesota, and it's a significant amount. And as I say, there just isn't enough room, the density is being what it is. Rural Minnesota is the natural place for that to happen. So I think we need to realize that, too, about rural Minnesota.
Thank you. More questions from members? Thank you so much for your presentation. Senator Anderson.
Thank you. I appreciate your perspective, and I agree with you that people, wherever they live in Minnesota, they supported this amendment, and that's wonderful, and that people, whatever community they live in, need to have access to parks. It's just really important to our quality of life everywhere. I guess we're really grappling with this whole how to divide it up and what's a fair and equitable proportion. And I serve on the Habitat portion council as well, the Lessard Council, and I've been a little concerned that there's been comments made that the metro area shouldn't get Habitat restoration dollars. And I wonder if we should talk about, you know, dividing up all these constitutional funds and just splitting them 50-50 between the metro and greater Minnesota. I mean, it's, I don't know if that's a good idea either, but I know Senator Vickerman is, everyone's worried about making sure they get a share of this, and everyone needs to be worried about that, because I think it's critically important, you know, with something, such a public vote that the public participated in, that we really deliver some results to people in our state. And, you know, I've heard people say, well, people in my district, they recreate up north, so that's where we should spend the money, you know, up north. And I agree, we need to spend money up north and down south and out west and everywhere in between, and figure out how to do it fairly. So I wonder if, what do you think would be a fair distribution between the 7-county metro and the rest of the state? I mean, the Met Council jurisdiction is 7 counties, right? Not 11. So 7. So, but it's more than half the population. So what would be a fair split if we were going to divide things that way?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, probably the way to look at it from representing greater Minnesota, they just want a fair share. And when we looked at the recreation here, you know, we could have said three pieces of the pie when it came back through the governor's request for 24, 38, 38. We were kind of willing to accept that. And I think the biggest thing on the recreation part is that is defined for greater Minnesota on grants. On the resource part, that might be a different look. I do think that I also lived in Metro, and I worked with DNR. I was a Metro Regional Park Manager. The Metro area has very valuable resources, too. And so how you split that will be very, I think you have to look at projects and work with a committee and people similar to what we're doing today. I think it's very well worthwhile, and I greatly appreciate being here.
Madam Chair, Chuck
Wilkins,
Stearns County Parks, Senator Anderson, I think it'll be important to recognize that there are different rules that apply between greater Minnesota and the metro area also in your discussions, where we're looking at concentrating on capital activities. That's the reason that we would like that 24% to be exclusive. And the reason for that, and, you know, selfishness is certainly an underlying factor, I would admit, you know, for greater Minnesota, is that if in Metro you are able to use your money for operations and then you go to the statewide, which Metro also has access to, for air acquisition, greater Minnesota comes in with a project that's a development project. Which is more important, acquisition or development? So it really puts, it kind of skews the table a bit, in the sense that acquisition is really key for preservation, to provide the legacy. And that's why we would like to make a distinction that in greater Minnesota we're looking for capital activity, which are very, we think are very quantifiable as we go through the program that the DNR has.
Thank you. Senator Anderson, this is one of our, you know, this is the challenge that we face, and that is precisely the reason why we are inviting members who have really dealt with this. Mr. Wolk and I saw the report that was put together in 2005 about this issue. I saw other reports that were put together in 2003, and I see the names. Your name was in that report, and I see the names of other people who are here today. So this is not new. This is something that we've struggled with. And the question that you raised with respect to, you know, do we acquire more? And then how do we give you the resources so that you can really maintain it? How do we find that balance is so key. And so we want to make sure that when we make this decision, we take all of those concerns and ideas into consideration to really make a balanced decision. Senator Back.
Well, Madam Chair, just a thought. I think as we go forward, we ought to give special consideration to capital-type projects, maintenance that's been deferred, that local governments have intentionally put off because they haven't had the money. I think if you go down the road of starting to just do operations with this, you're going to lose a tremendous opportunity that this money, this one-time money, is going to provide to do either some expansion of the system or improvements to facilities. I think it's going to be very hard if you go down the operating road to prevent local governments from just reducing their local share, their local participation in operating. You know, absent some kind of a maintenance of effort provision, which I don't believe we're going to do, considering all the attention on the whole maintenance of effort and state mandates now, I think we're probably, the pendulum's probably going the other direction right now. Local governments at the end of this session are going to have been willing to, and I really appreciate their willingness to share in the burden of trying to help the state balance its budget, but it's going to put a lot of stress on their property taxpayers. We all know that, and they are going to be looking for ways to save some money at the local level to try and hold down what are certain to be significant property tax increases. And if we just put money into maintenance, I don't know how critical I would be of local governments trying to hold down property tax burdens in our communities for reducing some of their efforts in other places like this if the state makes some money available. And I'd hate to see that happen. So I think the best way for us to prevent that happening would be to try and put it actually into some kind of an infrastructure, whether it's deferred maintenance or some capital things. I think there's less opportunity for local governments to capture some savings. Not that I don't want them to capture savings, but I think this money does provide a good time, one-time opportunity for a period of time here to actually get some things on the ground and make some repairs to buildings and facilities that haven't been taken care of as well as we all would like them to.
Thank you.
Just something for us, I think, to have a serious consideration to going forward.
Thank you, Senator Back. And one thing that became clear to me as I reviewed the reports and the information that is available is that many groups have attempted to really put together an inventory of what we have and maintain that so that we have a clear sense of what is happening with our parks and trails. But we don't have that system in place. And so that's one issue that I am very interested in exploring with DNR, is how do we put together an inventory, and how do we maintain that so that we can every 2 years review and do exactly what you are asking us to do, Senator Back, which is to say, you know, are we maintaining, are we expanding, where do we have gaps in the state of Minnesota, where do we, you know, intend to build a trail, a regional trail that never got, you know, built in, what is happening to our parks today. So unfortunately, we don't have that. We know some things, and I think that the metropolitan region has more information, but certainly we need to do more. We need to move on into the next part of our agenda. Thank you again for your testimony, and thank you for being here. We're going to have a little bit more time for more conversation about this in a few minutes. Judy Erickson is here. Thank you for from the Parks and Trails Council. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Judy Erickson. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota. And I want to say how much I appreciate the hearing this morning and the discussions that you've had so far. You know, we've worked on this for many years at the Parks and Trails Council, and so we are excited to start talking about the future with this new money. Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota is a nonprofit citizens organization, and we've been around for over 50 years. I just wanted to make sure you understand that we are a citizen organization. We are funded through membership, personal, corporate, and foundation gifts. We have representation of Minnesotans from all over the state and our board of directors as well. But our common denominator is that we care about parks and trails, and we care about making sure the legacy that has been created in this state for parks and trails is passed on. Following the passage of the legacy amendment, we started looking at many of the issues that you are talking about today and decided at a first starting point would be to put together a set of principles to guide our discussions and our work with other park agencies and interest groups. And you have a fact sheet in your packet, and on page one of that fact sheet is a list of the principles that we developed. And I won't read them all, but you can take a look at them. Some of them have already been discussed today. First one, though, is that the Park and Trail Fund is not sufficient to meet all of the needs of our parks and trails systems throughout Minnesota, and that we will continue to depend on bonding, LCCMR, and other traditional sources of funding to meet the future needs and ongoing needs of our state parks and trail systems. Also, the issue of equity and balance that has been discussed today, we do believe there needs to be equity and balance between the three parks and trail systems because they all serve Minnesotans. Also, we need to understand and recognize that the needs of the different park systems are different. Just heard from the Greater Minnesota Parks people, and they've talked about capital type needs. There are other needs that are priorities for the different systems, and so one size is not going to fit all here in terms of how you allocate these funds. Just a comment on the issue of equity and balance that they've already been talking about today. And just a reminder, as you all know, the state park and trail system is established by the legislature, and you oversee every dime that goes into the state park and trail system. And the general fund and user fees are the only source of funding. There are no property taxes available to our state parks and trail system. But that's because, you know, these are places that are high value to all Minnesotans. And even though they are located outside of the metro area, they are not, as you all know, on the same level as our county and regional parks. Each has a different niche. Traditionally, the legislature, and especially during the budget years, you have recognized that the role that state parks and trails play in value to all Minnesotans and the role that metro parks play in value to providing resources and recreational opportunities in the metro area. And so you have traditionally treated both of those systems with equity and balance. I think that's what we are talking about from our perspective with equity and balance. But we also recognize that there is a role for county and city parks outside of these two systems that are of equal value to Minnesotans. They serve a different niche, but all Minnesotans, we all love our parks, whether it's our corner park, our state park, or our regional park. They're all of value. So as you look at how we put this together, I think all three pots do need to be funded. We do recognize that the people of Minnesota have given us a unique opportunity to really support and enhance our parks and trails across the state. And we do support developing funding strategies that will demonstrate visibly to our citizens the benefits of the new funding in areas of improved visitor services, resource management, facility maintenance, and connecting Minnesotans to the outdoors. Our priorities and goals for funding of the new for funding out of the new funds is really consistent as the testimony we gave during the debates on the legacy amendment. We testified at least once or twice, particularly in the Senate, that the areas we wanted to see addressed through the new funding for the state parks and trails were the areas of enhanced and accelerated visitor services, resource protection, and maintenance of our state park and trail infrastructure. You know, we have one of the oldest and most, I mean, in the nation, we're a national leader in state parks. And we also lead the nation in trails. But the biggest challenge has always been the dependence that they have on the general fund. And if you look on page 2 of our handout, there's some graphics showing you some of the issues relating to the general fund spending. And I know many of you are familiar with the situation that has been going on, especially in the last 5 years. So our priority is we really think that the future viability of our state park and trail system really does lie with the new park and trail fund. And specifically, we want to see investments in 4 broad areas. Visitor services, conservation, education, and access, which is people-oriented. Resource management, taking care of the natural resources. We have 261,000 acres in our state park system, and then there's all the 2,000 or whatever miles of trails we have that have resources to be taken care of. And then facility maintenance. Director Nelson touched on the state park system facility, but it is one of the oldest in this in the country. Many of the buildings were built during the CCC years, and many of their campgrounds and things do need to be updated to reach future generations. And then maintenance of our system. That's the infrastructure that we have invested already and we need to take care of. And then, of course, we want to provide for the future. So what we need to have flexibility as we move forward. The needs that we have identified now and want to see addressed today may change in 10 years. So as you move forward and putting this together, we need to recognize that we'll need to change and need to provide into the future perhaps some different focus. Our priorities for this year as the start is really listed on page 3 of your handout, and it's a very detailed list, and it is a work in progress. We are talking with the DNR and different members about some of these issues, so this is not set in stone, but it does address the areas that I've mentioned in a little more detail, and I think as you move forward and looking at bill drafts and details and outcomes, we can get very specific so that we can show that line of separation that you've talked about. Many of the things that are on this list are things that you say, well, you should be doing them anyway. Well, with the dependence on the general fund, there has not been the resources to do them anyway. If you only have 10 naturalists in state parks, you can't, and you don't have any additional resources, you're still going to only have 10 naturalists. Finally, I just want to mention that the activities that we've identified really do are job-related, and that is, I know, and very important this year, but the work that gets done in state parks and trails takes people. And so we are looking for an active and visible work to be done in our state parks and trails and enhanced presence of people. Working and greeting visitors and being providing good service. And we also see an opportunity for the MCC and the Youth Conservation Corps to do some of this work, which I think is important, and they traditionally had a good role there. But I also do want to touch on that it is appropriate that there be additional signage and notice to park visitors that the new activities are a result of the legacy funding, so that in addition to seeing the new activity and the upgraded facilities, there's a notice saying this was done courtesy of your vote. I think that is very important. We also do think it will be important that regular reports or updates are provided to you, the legislature, perhaps looking at enhanced website activities and accountability are types of things that we could consider to making sure the public can see and understand what is being done with these funds. Finally, we all value our interconnected system of parks and trails. They provide access to one-of-a-kind scenic vistas, natural and cultural resources. They also contribute to healthy and active citizens, which is an important public benefit. And they contribute to the state's $11 billion tourism economy, which is an important economic activity as well. So previous legislators and governors have done just a tremendous job in creating our state park and trail system and all of our parks and trails in Minnesota. Our challenge for the future is making sure that the legacy continues for our children and grandchildren. Thank you, Madam Chair, very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. When I was reading some of your reports and trying to learn about your organization, I noticed that you have a very large board.
Yes.
How many people do you have in your board?
I believe it's 36.
Yeah, I counted about 35. So, yeah, 36 people in your board. So I was quite impressed to see the background of the people that have participated in all the efforts throughout the years. But I was impressed to see that you deal with a 35 board member. That's a huge board. I don't want to put you in this spot, Ms. Erickson, but it just so happened that you're one of the few organizations that really have a statewide perspective. And when I read your recommendations and I read your reports, it seems that more and more your message is about maintaining and opening access and preserving. And I don't see a lot of messages in terms of acquisition of land. Not that I'm not saying that you might not identify that as important, but one thing, remember that I'm a metro person and visit most of the parks in the metro area, and when I go to places like Fort Snelling, for instance, I just want to cry because the park is just disintegrating. You know, the buildings are falling down, literally. And so that's my perspective of parks in the city where, you know, we're not maintaining. Is it your perspective, or do you think that if we are to really put a vision in place and target these dollars, do we need to really focus our attention on preserving, maintaining, investing in what we have?
Madam Chair, yes, that is our vision for these new funds. We do support acquisition, but we also, at this time, we continue to want to work through the LCCMR and the bonding process for acquisition, simply because these funds, the legacy amendment, the 14.25%, the size of that amount that is available is simply not enough to do everything that needs to be done in parks. And we do support acquisition, but at this time we continue to want to look at LCCMR and other sources of funding.
Thank you. Senator Saxon.
Madam Chair, I realize this is obvious, or supposed to be obvious, but we do have 25 years on this. So,
yep.
And we certainly don't want to divide it up so specifically early that if somebody has a good idea next year, the year after, that we can't take advantage of it. And this isn't spoken just to you, Ms. Erickson. You did a great job. Thank you.
Madam Chair, that is one of our
Thank
points
you.
That
yes,
we
Ms.
need
Erickson.
To not lock it all in stone, but look towards the future and have flexibility.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. And Senator Saxon, thank you for that comment. I think that we've been talking a lot about that, and I know Senator Anderson has been having this conversation about, do we need to have a formula? Do we have to have a formula for 25 years? All of these questions that the public have, and this is a very challenging question, and what do we do if we lock ourselves into formulas forever and ever, and if the situation changes, especially now, these economic times have really given us a very interesting perspective as to what our priorities should be in times like this. Senator Vickery.
Madam Chair, just for my information, no matter what we do, it goes before the full legislative body. I will tell you, if it's not treated fairly, there's not going to be the votes to pass it in that body. So keep looking at, just because we decide, we have to have 67 people also tell us.
Thank you, Senator Vickerman. So absolutely correct. And when Senator Anderson Senator Chaudhry bring their conversations to the table in our committee about the funding for Habitat, I think about the same thing. Senator Vickerman, I said, whatever conversation is taking place, I'm going to vote on this. And there are people who are going to introduce legislation, so whether people want to, limit the conversation to certain things, that is absolutely correct, Senator Vickerman. That's why it is so important that we bring a perspective that can really bring, the 67 members together. And I see that we don't have, you remind me that we don't have our minority members in this group today. I just realized that. So it's so important that we bring all perspectives to the table and that we put something in place that will have the support of the entire Senate. Thank you, Ms. Erickson. And finally, we have in the agenda Mr. Brian Rice, that represents the Minnesota Recreation and Park Association and Metropolitan Parks Implementation Agencies. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it is Brian Rice, and just for the record, it's actually I represent the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. But Mr.
Sorry.
Doug Carnival and Bo Carlson are here, and they'll be participating. They actually represent the Park and Recreation Association. And I am speaking on behalf of at least the implementing agencies on a general level. I do have some handouts, the colored sheets in your packet, and I'll kind of be speaking from that and making a couple points. I do want to thank the Senate for doing this. And really, I want to say the Senate has probably had the most central role in funding metro parks over the last 30 years. In 1974, the legislature passed a law that created the Metropolitan Park System. And what it did, it combined the resources of cities and counties in the metropolitan area that had investments previously in parks and made them the equivalent of the state park system. At the time, in the 70s, there were only three of the approximately 60 parks that the state ran that were in the seven-county metropolitan area, and the residents of the metropolitan area were greatly underserved by park amenities. Beginning in the 70s with the designation of metro parks, the state then started to provide capital funding for those park systems, and it allowed systems like Minneapolis and St. Paul that were extremely old to expand and revitalize. It allowed systems in the counties such as Dakota, Washington, suburban Hennepin to expand and grow, and it's created a model park system for the nation. We have over 30 million user visitors a year to the Metro Park system. That's compared to 8 for the DNR system and under 1 million for these rural regional parks. So 30 million users use this system. It's one of the heaviest used park systems in the country, and it's a model, and it's used, and it takes money to it's been immensely successful. I think if you wanted to say what are the outcomes, are people using them? And they're using them, and they're loving them to death. In 1985, it was a Senate position that prevailed that provided general fund funding for these systems. Senator Carl Cronin carried that legislation. It went through the Senate floor, and the Senate prevailed in conference committee. Leading up to that were a number of studies that I can share with the committee that were done by the Metropolitan Council and various task force that looked at this analysis, and 100% of this system was borne by fees or property taxes, largely property taxes. The system was very integrated. Local Unit Center Anderson, for example, hosts the biggest used park in the state, Como Park, and 70% of the visitors to Como Park are not St. Paulites, yet St. Paul is paying 90% of the cost of that park.
Madam Chair, I thought it was 80%.
Well, there might be some fees in there.
No, 80% that are not from St. Paul.
Yeah, it might be higher. Excuse me.
And we welcome them.
Yeah, no, and it's a tremendous resource. Every child in the state's probably gone through that zoo or the conservatory. Certainly mine did. It's an amazing resource. In Minneapolis, we have the Chain of Lakes, now the Central Riverfront. The legislature provided $50 million in capital funds to deindustrialize the riverfront in Minneapolis, and that spurred $1.6 billion in private investment. Virtually all the housing growth in Minneapolis in the last 20 years has come from that riverfront. Why? Because you built the park there. Parks are probably the best investment you can make in terms of adding property wealth, in terms of getting people out recreating. I mean, if you look at it in terms of public investment and what it does for people to connect them to nature, health benefits, property tax things, Minneapolis probably wouldn't have survived a lot of the changes that happened in the 60s and the 70s. What they found is that property values stayed high in those areas where there were parks, Minnehaha Creek, Minnehaha Park, the River Gorge, Chain of Lakes. Now we have the Central Riverfront. Similarly, when you look at the property values in St. Paul, wherever there's a park, the values are maintained. So those issues that the system was created that was primarily property tax funded, yet normally in the metropolitan, these metropolitan regional parks, 40% of the threshold is you have to have over a certain number of acres. They're large blocks of land. They're not the neighborhood parks and playgrounds or ball field. They're open recreation spaces. It's Raspberry Island in St. Paul, Chain of Lakes in Minneapolis, Elm Creek Reserve, Morris Baker, French Park, Lake Billesby in Anoka County. I mean, on and on, Keller area in Ramsey. These are large blocks of land. They're not active. They're open space recreational things. Places where people can go and connect with nature, much like our state parks. The research and methodology leading up to that 1985 legislation said the state did have an obligation to fund these. I mean, that was a policy decision. The Senate had a position. It was adopted in tough economic times. That was the year the House was controlled by Republicans. Governor Perpich was governor, and it was a difficult measure. At that time, the state promised 40% to fund the system. The money that was appropriated in 85 provided 10% of the funding. And throughout those times, we've maintained those appropriations. The next big event was 2000, starting the issue with, again, a Senate position. Senator Lessard brought forth the constitutional amendment. Former Senator Price is here today. Senator Anderson was there. Senator Lessard had a 1/8 bill for hunting and fishing. He couldn't get the bill out of Senator Krentz's committee. But when he added parks, both DNR Parks and Metro Parks, Senator Anderson signed on, Senator Price signed on, Senator Krentz, others, got the bill out of that committee, got it to the tax committee, got it out of the tax committee, and actually got it to the floor. And then that was the year it was a third, a third, a third. The Senate had a third, the governor had a, Ventura had a third, and the House had a third. Senator Moe, to his credit, used that third to take the sale, the tax in lieu of sales tax and lottery tickets and devote it to natural resources. Half of those proceeds at the time went to the DNR Game and Fish Fund, 22.5 to DNR Parks, 22.5 to Metro Parks. And that's, as Mr. Steffrud's box showed, there was that Metro Park O&M number, then lottery number was the next building block on that. And that got the Metro Park system up to about 20% funding by the state, which was immense help. And to answer your question, Senator Bach, Representative Holstein, now Commissioner Holstein, told the Metro agencies, he said, I don't want you using that money for salaries. It needed to be used for maintenance, to the deferred maintenance issues you were talking about. And ever since 2000, the implementing agency in the Metro area have tracked those expenditures, and they've put them into repaving, your point, deferred maintenance, Senator Bach, things that need to get fixed. And believe me, you know, park systems change. We're in the sixth generation of Minneapolis parks, and there's been six rebuildings of that park system. I mean, you can't stay static. These things get worn out. Same with the DNR. I mean, I was up at Teta Gooch. They've done some work there, and you can see the new work, and you can look at the old stuff. I mean, we wear these facilities out, and they need to be replaced. I was in your district, Senator Bach, at the Devil's Kettle. I hiked to the place. You have your annual constituent meeting on the top of Eagle Mountain. And you can tell that those facilities are worn out. I mean, they need to be replaced, and they're in nature. I mean, you know, we 100 years ago, we had Theater Worth build a system of parks in Minneapolis, and there were elm trees, and it was great for a while, except 30 years ago, the whole resource got wiped out. We lost a couple hundred thousand trees because of a disease. So, you know, what's operations, what's maintenance? It's really any natural resource needs to be maintained in some level. One of the other issues that in 2000, again, it was a Senate position, Senator Lessard, the constitutional amendment. I mean, Ms. Erickson's chart here. I mean, we really need to get real about this. If you look at page 2, why did we have this amendment? Because we couldn't get the money out of the legislature for these things. I mean, we have great resources and assets, but they weren't being taken care of because we weren't getting the money. The state couldn't get to 40% on park funding. You couldn't fund the DNR parks. You couldn't meet some of the needs that are going on in greater Minnesota in terms of adding parks. So, I mean, these dollars are really precious, but the reason worked 10 years on this on behalf of my park board, Mary Merrill Anderson's here, was a superintendent, was a park board chair. She spoke on this issue when she was superintendent in this room with Senator Sams at a press conference. Senator Bickerman, you were here that day too, to say we needed this amendment because the resources were just not being derived from the legislature, and so they needed to be accumulated somehow. And you know, luckily, we're here today, and that's kind of my last bullet point. And this is a big endeavor. You do have big challenges facing you. But as you go forward and looking at this, I think, you know, the second sheet, I really want to remind you, we are in favor of fairness and equity. But our definition of equity is probably going to be different than some of the other people in the room. I, for one, would agree with Senator Anderson's point that the metropolitan area counts in this state. And when it comes to park funding and some other things, that really always hasn't been the case. I know those may be harsh words to some, but as somebody who's worked for the park board for 27 years now, that's been my experience, particularly when you look at this chart. This is derived from a study that was done. It's somewhat dated 2004 LCMR report on park studies. It shows annual user visits between the state park system, metro regional parks, and non-metro regional parks. It shows acreage and operating budgets. Now, these operating budgets have gone up a lot because this data is 5 or 6 years old, but again, I'd remind the committee, it's 33 million user visitors now in the metro system. It's still about 8 in the park system. I'm sure the non-metro regional system is growing. And as you consider these things, though, and we would support an allocation system that would have DNR parks and metro parks treated the same. We think the governor is not putting enough money, that 38, 38, 24, we think is not generous enough to DNR or the Metro Parks. We would support an allocation to Greater Minnesota Parks. But I guess I'd remind the committee, if you're going to start funding this new system, have a plan for it. It's easy to build capital projects, but somewhere these local governments, Senator Bach, are going to have to levy the taxes to support the new facilities. I think you need an inventory of the systems you've got now. And in my view, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to go out building more things when you're honestly not taking care of all the things that are there now. I don't think that would be prudent. Even though there's a demand for it, I think you need to... I think that the committee would be wise to consider what it's doing with these dollars. And we do have a great system, but it's a system that's in need. I think I can assure the committee that, for example, in Minneapolis, our total park budget is about $50 million, but fully a third of it, $17 million, in our property taxes go to maintain this regional system that gets 13 million user visitors a year. St. Paul's numbers are pretty similar to Senator Anderson, so it's a big property tax effort, and these are great resources. Minnesotans use them; they love them; they're very valuable. I think we are seeing as far as formulas or things like that, we think there needs to be a fair allocation. As far as use goes, the DNR has outlined several good categories of use, dealing with access by people, protection of facilities, protection of resources. Those are all things that as a overarching system for these funds that the metropolitan area systems, I think, would agree to. I think there is a component in these dollars for acquisition and development, because there are some needs that happen in Greater Minnesota or even in metropolitan Minnesota where there could be some use. There are counties in the metro area, for example, Carver Scott, Washington County, Dakota County, that are still developing. And if they were given these resources, they may prioritize those differently than, say, core cities would prioritize. And so I think having some flexibility for the metropolitan area as you move forward with legislation, we would like to see that. And these are people, Senator Torres, where you talked about the Parks and Trails Council, we're talking about elected officials here. I've got a 9-member elected board of a park system, St. Paul City Council, Bloomington City Council, and elected Three Rivers Board and County Commissioner Boards. And I would like to close by just saying this. In 1883, the legislature, 25 years after statehood, created the Park Board. I mean, we are created by a special act of the legislature. And the reason the legislature created us is that for 25 years of Minneapolis' city history, they weren't able to develop parks because something else always was more important. And we had that was our mission. Governor John Pillsbury was one of the founding members, as was William Watts Fowle, the first president of the University of Minnesota. Charles Loring, Horace Cleveland, the landscape architect, they had a great vision for parks in Minneapolis. And today, every inch of shoreline in Minneapolis on our lakes, every inch of the creek bed in our creeks in Minneapolis, and 85% of our riverfront is owned by the public, and it's accessible to the public. And it's really a model for what I think you people want to do with the Lessard money in general, and the parks money. I mean, these are resources that belong to the people. They need to be protected. They need to be nourished. They need to be cared for. And I am very blessed to represent this board. It's had 126-year history, and I think the results show in that. And my last statement would be this. In 6 years after we created the first state park created in the state was by the legislature. It was Minnehaha State Park. It's still called that. The legislature, in its infinite wisdom, created the park. It was only the second one in the country. The first one was in upstate New York. And, of course, the legislature left the funding of the park to the city or to my park board. So I'm pleased that over those years we have got, and that park has really been redone with help from the state in the capital process. It's a great park facility now. And you're our creator. We want to be a partner with the state, and we want to work with you as you work in allocating these precious dollars.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Senator Back, you had a question.
Madam Chair, Mr. Rice, what kind of an admissions or fee structure do the regional parks have?
Madam Chair,
for visitors.
Mr. Rice.
Senator Back, it varies. Some of the park systems have annual permit fees, sticker fees, very similar to the DNR, and you can gain access in the suburban system. Three Rivers, for example, tends to have gated areas where you come in, and there's an annual permit fee, there are property taxes. In Minneapolis, we did institute a permit fee where you can park at some of our metered areas, and that's growing. The Met Council has encouraged that there be fees collected. I think we could get you some better statistics on that. But I think almost all the agencies will have some kind of permit fee that you'll stick in your car window, and that gains access.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
And I could just speak briefly about Como Park, which is pretty unique because it has the zoo and the conservatory and has those attractions. That's what a lot of people come to visit from outside the city. And it's been a debate year after year after year. We've made a commitment, though, to keep it a free zoo. And it's one of only two, I think, in the country, if not the only one in the country. And so a lot of it is about access for people. We don't want to limit it but the new visitor center, which the state has been very generous in helping to build and support the capital improvements in Como with the new visitor center and the new exhibits. And hopefully the new gorilla exhibit will come through this year. Anyway, they've been very aggressive in seeking voluntary donations with the new buildings, and they raise something like $1 million a year in donations at Como, just from people coming through, and they have a volunteer sitting there collecting money, and, you know, those few dollars that people throw in adds up a lot. So that's been really great for our park, but that doesn't work everywhere.
Well,
Senator Beck.
Madam Chair, I'd just be curious if there was instituted a $25 park entry fee like we have in state parks. I think we're at $25 for a park sticker. If that disparity in the number of visitors might change some. I mean, I got to tell you, Ms. Rice, I just don't think it's fair to make this comparison when people can go. I mean, Senator Anderson, Como Park's a wonderful place, and I think it's great that the city's willing to, and its taxpayers are willing to keep it free for people. But at the same time, I don't think it's fair to draw the comparison that there's all these visitors to regional parks where they can go free. I mean, that's like adding on. If I stop at the wayside rest and go to the picnic table going north, I mean, should that be considered a visit at a greater Minnesota facility? Or we've got all kinds of campgrounds, forest campgrounds around the state that are free to people. I just don't think it's a very fair comparison. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison. When you have to pay $25 to get into a state park, and many of the regional parks, whether they're greater Minnesota or in the Twin Cities, are, for the most part, free.
Madam Chair,
thank you.
On that point, many of the suburban parks do require the permit sticker. We can get you data on that. Minneapolis and St. Paul, it's an open system and people use it. I mean, the converse would be maybe the state should repeal the fee for state parks, and then you could see how much use has happened. I'm not sure that's feasible, but I do acknowledge that there, 40% of the DNR parks is fee-based, and obviously there's a demand for it and using it. I also think that as gas mileage is there, as you're looking at income levels, there's a lot of Minnesotans in Minneapolis that don't have the vehicles to travel 300 miles north or the resources to travel 300 miles north. And their connection with nature is maybe out their back door. We do have some barriers. They do pay property taxes to get access to that service. It's not insignificant that they pay, and we think they get a good service. And I admit, this is a big state. There's different needs. There's different ways of looking at these issues. I hope the community.
One thing, Mr. Rice and Senator, is that I do not believe that we could really fix all of this, really this year. But I tend to agree with you, Senator Beck, and one of the problems, at least I have had in the last few days in trying to put my arms around all of this, is that really DNR does not have this information for us. I have limited knowledge of, these parks, and obviously I know your system very well, Senator Anderson, because I go with my kids, but I don't have a good knowledge of the systems in greater Minnesota. And so it is very important that we have a good understanding of what we have and how, when we make these statements about, visits, why do we attribute it to that issue of fees, parking? Are we making an effort to really expand, the services available in the parks in Greater Minnesota so that we have more visitors? And I think that's what, at this point, I don't believe that we have.
Senator Beck.
Madam Chair, I certainly don't want to commit the DNR to anything they don't want to do, but let me just, if you wanted to have an enjoyable weekend or a couple enjoyable days, see if DNR Parks will take you on a tour and make stops at the state parks along the north shore of Lake Superior.
Yes.
You would
yes.
have a remarkable weekend.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I just would suggest that.
That is certainly a plan that I have for this committee, that we really need to do more of that, and we need to have access to this information and really be able to make the decisions about this funding in a way that really will enhance that for all the regions in the state. And so I don't know if we have to do that, make that decision right now this year, because there is a lot of information that we don't have. Senator Saxon and Senator Anderson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and this excellent presentation, Mr. Rice. But this amendment, you know, does include parks and trails, and both in the metropolitan area and in rural Minnesota, the trails and the number of people that they handle are an unbelievable portion. We don't want to forget them.
And Madam Chair, as I preparing for the center, Saxhog is right. The DNR numbers, I think, at 8.1 are only park visits. I think the trail numbers and collection would add to it. And believe me, I love the DNR parks. Senator Bach, I visited half a dozen of those parks on the North Shore. I was up there twice this year. They're magnificent. I mean, they're unbelievable. You can't they're beyond precious. I mean, our regional parkland in Minneapolis is valued about $2.5 billion, but you know those views on the North Shore are priceless. You know, I mean, as we would argue, Minnehaha is too. But we have a lot of great resources in this state, and I think that would be a good number to pull out, Senator Sachs.
Well,
state trails have heavily used.
And we cannot. The problem is we cannot camp in many of the places.
No.
In the metro, but
well, the trails do, Madam Chair. The trails do connect areas. The other thing about the trails is that they're maintained to a large extent by volunteers, which we don't see at parks either. And so it's a huge portion. When you're talking a snowmobile trail or an ATV trail, they're all done by volunteers, and they're grant and aid trails, and some of them are compensated. But
that's another thing we don't have.
The committee really would benefit by getting those numbers, because that is an important comparison. I think Metro Parks, it's about 26 million park visits and another 6-7 million trail visits, and probably the DNR numbers might even be more than that. You know.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Oh, Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, yes. I was just going to make a quick comment. I just signed a bill that will build a high-speed, I know there's a very variety of bills, but that would build a high-speed train that goes like 300 miles an hour from here to Duluth. And, man, wouldn't it be great if we could have an easy way to get up there and see those parks so that my constituents could do that for, you know, a reasonable price. And, you know, lots of people take buses to casinos. Why not have some buses that go to the state parks and take them there during the week when they're not so, they're really busy on the North Shore on the weekends? They're at pretty much full capacity. I would say the parking lots are packed and there's tons of people on the trails, and that's wonderful. But let's try to get more people up there. We do have a real treasure across Minnesota. We're lucky.
We really do, and this is precisely why I thought it was very important that we get together to really look at how do we put together a vision to preserve that and expand these great things that we have. We're going to do an exercise that is quite different right now. We have, I believe, about 28 people in the audience, and we would like to hear your thoughts if you are willing to share those thoughts with us. And we would like to give you an opportunity to really share your ideas, innovative thoughts you have about this issue, share your experience. And we cannot do this through this formal process we have because it will take us really the rest of the morning. So what we would like to do now is that we're going to form three groups. I think there are going to be about 10 people in each group. We are going to assign a senator to chair that particular group. So I would like to ask Senator Back, Senator Saxog, and Senator Anderson to be the moderators for that conversation. We are going to have about 20 minutes for that conversation. A note taker will be assigned to each group. You will have that flip chart available to you, and we would like to get your ideas in complete sentences so that we can really get your input and hopefully put it together in a report that will serve, will be used by this committee for the future deliberations and meetings. So we want to put ideas together that are priorities and what we want you to think when you come. It is very important that you remember this. All of us wear different hats and advocate for different things here. We have many people in the audience who lobby for specific regions, but this exercise is about a vision for the state. So we want to make sure that we support what Senator Back is talking about in the North Shore. We support what Senator Anderson is saying about Como Zoo, and we support the ideas from Senator Saxog about trails, and we take into consideration in a very serious way what Senator Vickerman has said about the fairness of distribution of dollars for the entire state of Minnesota so that we preserve the great parks and trails that we have. So we're going to have group number one in this corner, group number two in this corner, and group number three in this corner. And Senator Back, you're in charge of number one, Senator Anderson, number two, and Senator Saxog, number three. And we are just going to pull chairs together. This is very different. You haven't done this before, but we really need to try to get your input and your ideas. And then we're going to convene at 10:40. About 20 minutes. 10:50, excuse me. And at that point, I am going to ask Mr. Mueller to share with you some of the information we have about the actual money that we have available for this purposes. Are you guys? So 20 minutes, and we will convene again. So we're going to...
I'm 1-1 over here.
You are the number 11. I would like to have the DNR members distributed in different groups, please. So we have three members. So for the formal purposes of this, we are in recess right now.
Good ideas. I think so.
Yeah, I think so. We're trying to focus on the legacy.
Absolutely.
I mean, the vision.
Yeah,
the lights are on. Okay, I think we're set to go now. We really appreciate your flexibility and your help in this process. Somebody said to me that if we were to create a process for this committee through which we just simply give money to projects, maybe $1 billion will not be enough. And so that we will become some kind of a bonding committee where we will have to give each member an opportunity to get their project done in their districts, and then we need how many votes, Senator Back, in order to pass that?
41 in the Senate.
So imagine how much money we need to do that. So that process may not be good. Another thing that became clear to me is that as much as I appreciate the governor's recommendation and I understand the tough position that they have in terms of telling the public how we should use their money, the moment we decide that we're going to create a formula and that you're going to have 10, 10, and you 20, and you 40, that's all people want to talk about. What is my share of this pie? And I believe that that's a problem because that prevents you and us from talking about priorities for the state of Minnesota. What we want is to create a vision, to develop a vision for parks and trails. Know how you can fight here for your piece of the pie. We get enough of that here, and we will do that anyway. But if we don't have a vision to divide this pie, we're not going to accomplish what you want to accomplish in each region of the state. So that was the purpose of this exercise, to move you away from thinking that this is your piece of the pie and you're going to defend it and you're going to come to talk to your senator because that's what you want when you don't even know what it is that we're going to do with that piece of the pie anyway. So I really appreciate this time that we took to really look about how do we create a vision for the state, how do we provide incentives. I overheard somebody saying this is about public space, and public space is about attracting people. It's not about building a building that will be empty. So how do we get our children to get to that building? How do we get our children to use those trails? So we may have some beautiful buildings as a result of all of this and trails, but then we're not going to have kids using those trails and those buildings. So is that what we want? I don't think so. So we're going to take a few minutes to hear, I don't know, Senator Anderson, Senator Saxock, Senator Back, if you would be willing just to share very briefly the outcome of your conversation, see if this was helpful in that regard, in developing the vision for us so that we can talk about how we're going to use this funding. And then Mr. Mueller is going to tell us a little bit about the funding that we know now is available, but that will change next week as we hear the forecast. But Senator Saxo, could you start with your report?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a lively discussion and many good points, but I'm just going to mention three briefly. One, I think, is a theme that runs through a lot of this, and that's just equity. People are willing to work together, just want to think they got a fair share. And as you say, we can argue about percentages till the cows come home. But the two that kind of intrigued me and I think are very important are, one, connectivity. The fact that it's important that trails in some way connect to us either physically or there's a good transportation way to get there or we connect with what they're all about. But it's important that that we understand that, and there was a good point made that you know, trails are great, but it's good that they go somewhere. If not, they should loop back. And the last thing is leverage. Whether it's money that's a part of this, I think it's important that this $14 million become more than just $14 million. It should be leveraged with either human resources, you know, volunteer efforts, whatever it is, other governments or other foundations or whatever. But it's very important that we make this more than just the $14 million, that it becomes something more than that, again, with the other resources that we have.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the notes that they're in here and trying to consolidate them together. We heard some really great themes. We started with observing that people value parks more than they value shopping in Minnesota, and so that's important. they get more visits, and that just recognizing how important they are to our lives here in Minnesota. We heard the theme of maintain what we have over and over and over again. We heard very much about the idea of connectivity, and trails bring us all together. All the different parts of the, you know, the metro, the region, the state parks, they connect all of us to each other. And so that's really important, sort of as a whole statewide vision for what we need to have. We need more information and data sharing between agencies. And there used to be some kind of a database where you could look at all the different levels of parks and recreation entities and assets, and that's hard to find now, people said. A lot about children and connecting children with nature and connecting children with parks and getting that next generation. We want all to have parks available in our own backyard so children will grow up, and all of us, of course, will benefit from having that access on a regular basis. And then we talked about sort of sharing the different parts of the state so children, a lot of children come from the greater Minnesota to visit Como Park. We need the metro children to visit the state parks and so have both of those opportunities. We heard that different parts of the state have different priorities for what they need. Some parts of the state don't want any more acquisition. They want maintenance of what they've got and restoration and development of what they've got. And some parts of the state are more interested in acquisition. So to me, I got a message that we're different and, you know, respect those local needs and differences. One more really important theme that was interesting to me was, as a legislator, we heard all the funds, all the constitutional funds, parks and trails, water, habitat, even cultural and arts legacy, and the LCCMR should all be looked at in a holistic way and not have these arbitrary differences, because there's different categories, but we should look at the big picture when we make funding decisions. There shouldn't be arbitrary, you know, exclusions of what's eligible, that a lot of things might cross-cut a lot of funding areas.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Back.
Well, we've got some common themes running between the three groups, I think. We defined what we thought should be some kind of criteria, didn't necessarily rank anything in order, but the first thing we took on was the issue of the word regional is used a lot in the language, and we felt that the use of the word regional shouldn't preclude city parks from applying for some of the grant money. And exactly how you define a city park project that might have some regional, it should have some regional use, but so we don't know exactly what, I think we use the word precluded, not to say that they're included, but just to say that there may be some exceptional cases where city parks can show some regional uses, that the city park shouldn't necessarily be precluded from being eligible. We thought one of the priorities for funding would be to preserve current assets. Another priority would be for acquisition. Connecting people with natural resources. Promote environmental awareness. That the use of the money would, a good use that ran, I think, across all three groups would be to connect different systems, whether they're connecting trails or connecting other systems, like connecting parks up with campgrounds or whatever. That to the extent that projects can aim to improve health and livability of communities would be a good goal. And that whatever we spent on, we make sure that over the long haul they're sustainable, because at some point, in many of these cases, both DNR and local governments eventually will have to maintain them in the going forward. And and that some portion of the money, and I think the way we approached it was, we shouldn't compartmentalize the money and get ourselves locked in, so that going forward people feel like they've got their share, that maybe there are, in some given year, there are some significant events or an opportunity, for example, that comes up, that we shouldn't be so rigid in developing a program here that it prevents us going forward from taking some opportunity that comes along the way. But we do suggest that some portion of the money should fit into some kind of a grant program. But outside of that, we think maintaining flexibility to respond to future projects is important, but that some portion should be committed to some kind of a grant program. And we concluded that we're probably not done. Madam Chair, I think we probably need another meeting, I would suggest, that my participants felt.
Thank you, Senator.
very definitely we will have more meetings and hopefully think about, you know, opportunities that we can engage more people. I know that because of the weather, we didn't have the attendance that we were hoping this morning. We have, we're very pleased to see the number of people that are here today. But thank you for your reports. And just to let you know, what we plan to do is put together this information in a form of a report. We will open, Senator Anderson and I would meet to talk about next steps and obviously share that with committee members in terms of how do we invite the public for more input, because this is just the beginning. This is not yet. And so we will continue to talk about that, and the whole issue of coordination, I think, is very clear. All members are talking about how do we coordinate these efforts, and this whole issue of how do we look at the money of the different PUTs from the legacy fund. Now I am going to ask Mr. Mueller to give us a brief overview of the funding for the funding process that we have right now, understanding that this is going to change after Tuesday, but at least what we know now. Mr. Mueller.
Oh, well, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Can I just make a comment first?
Absolutely.
Before we do that? Thank
Absolutely.
You. I want to thank you for your creative ideas today to get us into this process of talking and brainstorming. I think it's really valuable. And I just want to say that, you know, a lot of people ask, well, what's the process for spending this money? Because we don't have it all designated and cut and dried as much as we do with the Habitat portion of the legacy dollars. And as Senator Torres Ray said, I think this is important to remember. This is just the beginning of that process of establishing as much public input as possible, because we do have these funds mostly designated just to go through the legislature. And I've talked to Senator Rummel and Senator Torres Ray about making sure that we have, I'd really like to see these subcommittees have public hearings around the state over the next year and try to get as much public input as possible. And, you know, we have to put together a budget in the next month. We don't have time to do that now, but we're going to try to bring in as much feedback and ideas from people so that this is a really inclusive process. So I really appreciate your kicking this off today in that spirit.
Well, thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair, Senator, I think Senator Anderson brings up a good point. There's not a lot of time for any of this constitutional amendment money to really, I think, do a very thorough job. So I think it would be important for the people in the audience to not think just because something happened this year that all of a sudden is going to become the trend line going forward in future bienniums, because it would be good if this was kind of a living process going forward. And if we learn new things each year, we should be able to adjust the formula, you might say. So.
And, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Anderson.
Sorry to take the time, but Senator Bach, that's a very, very good point, very well said. And, you know, I've introduced a bill it's a rough draft. But the concept is that I think we need to establish long-term goals of what we want to see accomplished for each of these categories of funding, but not necessarily have rigid, you know, how we get there formulas. That's something to be determined. But I think you're absolutely right. This year is unique. We got to do a good job this year, but then we need to do the more long-term visioning of where we want to go with this money, where we want to be 25 years from now. And that will take a little bit of time. We won't get that all done by our budget deadlines this year.
Thank you. Mr. Mueller.
Sure. Madam Chair and members, I put together a one-pager. It's called Historical Parks and Trails State Spending. And it doesn't it just includes the money that the legislature appropriates, but not including bonding or trust fund dollars. And what I'm basically trying to show here is how much state money through the general fund and natural resources fund, and with the state parks and trails, there's some other state funds, a little bit of game and fish fund, special revenue funds like that, that go into the state parks and trails. So historically, going back to fiscal year 2006, we've had about $77 million a year in that year, and base funding now we're up to about $82 million a year when you look at just those state funds that you could say go basically towards the operations of parks and trails. the line underneath that is how much is now part of the dedicated Parks and Trails Fund. This is based on the November forecast. We have, this is just the revenues coming in. There's about $34 million in fiscal year 10, going up to about 36 in fiscal year 11. Now, we'll have to remember the first year, we'll probably have to establish some sort of fund balance, you know, 10% or something like that. So, and depending on how the February forecast goes, which I'm assuming that $34 million will probably go down a little bit, but we'll have roughly $30 million the first year and then, you know, $34, $35, $36 million the second year. And what the legislature will have to decide is, do we appropriate 1 year this year or 2 years, whether it's one-time funding, and each year we decide after that. So it's just to put roughly in perspective how much money is available in just this fund and then compared to what we are already appropriating, not including trust fund or capital dollars. So that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. And as you were talking, I was looking at these numbers and realizing what is the percentage of, you know, if we look at the 34 that we have right now in front of us, compare what is the percentage for the total fund that we have now? So it's less than, it's about 40%. So right now we're talking about, you know, the total fund that we get is 82. We're going to come up with 40%. If the trend goes the way it's going, in the future, this money is going down, and our money may be going up. So one thing that we really need to be careful about is if we continue this trend and lose the money that we have from the general fund and other funds, pretty soon this is the only money we're going to have. And we need to be very attentive to that issue. Right now, we're going to come up with 40%, really, of the an additional 40% if we look at this. And that ratio will be going up in this, you know, for this fund that we are talking about today. And so this is, that to me, that's an alarming trend and something that we have to pay attention to. And that's why it's so important that we talk about how we're going to use this money, not to supplant, because right. It would be very easy to supplant since we're losing so much money from the other funds that currently fund parks and trails. Any questions from members about this? Well, again, this is our first meeting. We will continue to talk. I thank you for all your input and your ideas. We will schedule another meeting soon. And for now, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.